This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 21st of August 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 21st of August, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headline stories this week: Barton Farm fears, family bus firm goes under after 25 years, and record crowd at Boomtown. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which is Barton Farm fears. Winchester College and the firm behind the Barton Farm scheme are locked in a land dispute which could further delay the 2,000-home estate and open the door to unwanted development, the Chronicle can reveal. Independent experts have been brought in to set the price of college-owned fields to be sold for the project. Carla Holmes believes the college is asking too much for the first chunk of land, providing 200 homes. But key players have not been told when the ruling is coming, adding to uncertainty over when construction will begin. Stephen Little, bursar of Winchester College, said, "They're writing their conclusions as we speak. They haven't given us a date for it. Given the nature of the site, the sensitivity of it, they need to take their time to get the right answer." As reported in the Chronicle last week, house building has already been pushed back to next month, amid what Carla's development director, Rob Westwood, described as frustrating dialogue with councils. The developer may have to reassess its financial calculations if the price is set too high, raising the prospect of further delays. Mr. Westwood did not respond to a request for comment. Civic chiefs have been warned that delay to the scheme could affect Winchester's housing land supply, allowing developers to argue that their plans are needed to make up the numbers. Plans for 350 houses in Pitt Vale, a stone's throw from 200 homes being built at Pitt Manor, are unpopular with residents and councillors and are expected to be rejected. But property insiders expect developer Linden Homes to win an appeal to the National Planning Inspector by arguing the council isn't hitting its targets. A senior industry source, who asked not to be named, said Winchester City Council had been blasé about the threat of delays. "They're all saying, 'We've got Barton Farm on the go,'" he said. "They're all banging the drum, and actually it's far from it. The people in the know are saying their supply is short because they're in cloud cuckoo land if they think Barton Farm is going to be delivering units by the end of next year. They assume they issue planning, and then there's a big commencement on site. But with these big major development areas, very often there's a bit of complex price negotiation to take place." Other landowners and developers are keeping a close eye on Pitt Vale, he added, warning of a raft of planning applications if the government rules in Linden's favour. The council's latest figures, published in December, estimate the first 120 homes on Barton Farm will be provided in 2016-17, with 200 more per year until the final batch of 80 in 2027. Steve Opachich, or Opachich, the council's head of strategic planning, said, "It's just one part of the overall five-year land supply. If that went down, it's not going to happen, but it's not likely to mean we haven't got a five-year housing supply anymore."
Family bus firm goes under after 25 years. One of Hampshire's best-known bus companies has gone out of business. The family-run Brygen Tours, which has run bus and coach services for 25 years, has ceased trading. Company's House revealed on Friday that all of the directors had resigned, adding that Brygen's accounts were now 4 months overdue. It's not known how many people have lost their jobs. 9 staff have already joined rival operator Zelebus, which has taken over rural bus services previously run by Brygen, serving areas including Eastleigh, Botley and Bishop's Waltham. The handover was originally due to take place on September the 7th. Brigin announced it was ditching the routes to focus on its coach services. It added that several drivers would transfer to Celebus, while remaining employees would be retained to operate the coaches. It means that the bus services in the Botley, Bishop's Waltham, Hedge End and Eastleigh areas will go on. A spokesman said, Celebus will operate the routes on 7, 8, 15 and 17, and passengers will not see any difference in their services. Brigin's base already resembles a ghost town. Only one coach was visible from the road yesterday, and telephone calls to the company went unanswered. Stuart Dunn, chief executive of Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, said, It's always really sad to see a family-run business suddenly disappear. Members of the Bus and Coach Association criticised local authorities for refusing to award long-term contracts that provided operators with financial security. Spokesman Martin Allen said, I don't think the industry has been in good health for at least 5 years. Quite a few firms have gone. And the Confederation of Passenger Transport said that bus and coach companies had been hit by repeatedly rising costs. Brigin's distinctive fleet of cream-coloured coaches have been a familiar sight on Hampshire's roads for almost 3 decades. The company had been due to run a series of excursions over the next few weeks to destinations including Dawlish, Stratford-upon-Avon and Salisbury. Brigin was launched in 1990 by Hampshire coach driver Brian Botley and his wife Janet. Initially he worked from the couple's house in Swanmore, taking bookings by phone and delivering tickets personally to customers' homes. Over the years he watched the number of Brigin vehicles grow from 1 to 25, and in 2009 Mr. Botley received the freedom of the City of London for services to transport.
Record crowd at Boomtown. It's one of Hampshire's largest cities and it's only here for 4 days a year. Only on the streets of Boomtown would you see DJs in portaloos, robot burlesque shows and 46,000 people raving through the night. The festival returned to Winchester bigger than ever last weekend with a record attendance. But crime levels were level or down on last year despite an extra 8,000 people through the gates at Matterley Estate. Like any city, Boomtown has unique districts, with new sights, sounds and smells at every turn. There's the Wild West, where costumed cowboys lure you to hidden parties, the narrow walkways of Chinatown and grandmother's living room, a bingo nightclub boasting the festival's only DJ to arrive on a free bus pass. Huge numbers came in costume, with efforts ranging from face paint to elaborate mechanical costumes and laser guns. Around 60 people were escorted off-site over the weekend, with more than half related to drug dealing. A further 250 were given cautions for drug offences, while £65,000 worth of substances were seized by police or dumped in amnesty bins. Superintendent Kelly Whiting said, While the amount of drugs seized has reduced slightly, and it's clear that our proactive approach helped to restrict the supply of illegal substances prior to entry, drugs do present a significant issue. It seems that possession and use are still high, with a high number of people reporting through welfare and medical for treatment. Many of these seem to indicate that MDMA and LSD are a concern at festivals this summer. A handful of festival goers were taken to hospital after taking a new, stronger form of LSD, one officer told the Chronicle. 6 assaults, 3 robberies and 2 sexual offences were reported, with thefts from tents down by a quarter. Noise concerns spread this year after wind carried music across Winchester, prompting complaints from South Wanston, 6 miles away. Festival organisers did not respond when asked for the number of noise complaints. An ongoing planning dispute makes its future uncertain. Earlier this year, civic chiefs limited non-agricultural use of the estate to 28 days per year, far fewer than it currently takes to build Boomtown. The City Council and South Downs National Park allowed this year's event, but the city has warned landowner landowner Peveril Bruce that he must consider the planning implications of future events. Now, there's a number of photographs of young people having an absolutely wonderful time, really enjoying themselves. There's a group of five young men in Mexican costumes going under the name of the band Mariachi El Pinche Gringo. All Mexican young men. Looks as though they've had a few. And some big smiles at Boomtown on Saturday from two young ladies dressed in dazzling costumes. And Jamie Davidson and Aaron Edgoose sitting on a chicken and a... looks like a little doll man with a blue hat on, policeman maybe. Both of them got a pint of sherbet in their hands. Stag do for Dave Cox, being carried along by a group of young men. Lager can being waved in the background. Dancers in the wood, five young girls, seemingly having a lovely time. And two fantastic photographs, one by day and one by night, of the whole area of Boomtown. And the one at night with its wonderful blue, yellow, red, green lights. It was quite striking, quite remarkable. Yeah, have a good time, kids.
Thank you. That concludes the headline articles. Now we continue with death notices and then Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And then we'll do announcements and what's on. So we start with the death notices. Alexander, John Arthur Alexander, formerly of Winchester but latterly resident in Dorset, died aged 92. Busk, Martin Busk, died on the 7th of August. Coombs, Joan Coombs, died suddenly at home on the 16th of August. Dennis, John Michael Dennis, died suddenly on the 15th of August, aged 74. Jen, Colin Francis Jen, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. And Kingsland, Catherine Kingsland, died peacefully at home after a long illness, aged just 48. And now we move on to Christian comment, which I think Albie's going to read. Thank you, Albie.
When Christ and his saints slept. It's a glorious summer's Saturday afternoon, and I'm glad to be free to wander around one of Winchester's glories, the Hospital of St. Cross and St. Cross Church. All looks idyllic. There's a wedding about to commence in the Norman Church. Began in 1135. A brisk trade in the tea room, site of the 100 Men's Hall, and many of the current residents are enjoying sitting in the sunshine. But rewind to between 1133 and 1136, one of the grimmest periods of English history, to the time of the Bishop of Winchester, Henry of Blois, brother of King Stephen, at the time when Stephen was fighting Matilda, daughter of Henry I. Named as Henry's heir, she desperately wanted her throne back from Stephen. No one could have imagined that this struggle became a civil war that would last 19 winters, 1135 to 1154. There was a famine in the land, when corn was dear and flesh and cheese and butter, for there was none in the land, says the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. And wretched men starved with hunger. It was even said that Christ and his saints slept. Henry was only 28 when appointed bishop. He was a great builder and architect. The Tower of Winchester Cathedral, three palaces, seven castles, and some say Romsey Abbey are to his credit. But St. Cross is a living witness to his care and compassion for the poor and destitute. He wanted 13 poverty-stricken men to be housed and cared for, and in addition, 100 other poor men, and this included their families, to be given dinner each day. Here was the most ancient almshouse in England, and the tradition founded by Henry would last to around 1800. I want to forget about Henry's wealth, ambition, and struggle for power in this period, called by some historians the Anarchy, and honour his tremendous compassion in founding St. Cross, thus setting an example that this country would follow for hundreds of years. Fast forward to the present. Are Christ and his saints asleep as we look for compassion and hospitality for the migrants who have fled homes and persecution, looking for a country that will welcome them? This is now a humanitarian crisis on a gigantic scale, and things are only going to get worse as the violent conflict situations in the migrants' home countries remain untackled. Whatever the politics of immigration, issues of global justice, and the political fallout of situations that we in the past have helped to create, the problem has come to our own door. I cannot believe now that Christ and his saints are sleeping. Rather the opposite. I believe the legacy of early traditions are flourishing in, for example, night shelters for the homeless, and both individuals and charities like Médecins du Monde responding to the Cali crisis with generosity and compassion. Enjoying the tranquility of St. Cross this afternoon, this is my hope and prayer. And that's written by Mary Gray.
Thank you. And now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this from Phil Yates. Don't make another white elephant. Sir, how ironic that From the Files 25 years ago, August the 13th, reported that although the Brooks shopping centre would be ready by October 1990, only a few shops are likely to be open by Christmas. I don't think all the units have ever been occupied. A curse must have been put upon from the start, because the development, as seen today, was not the one chosen by public vote. There were three models, A, B and C, and most votes went to A and B, with C in the minority. Which model did the councillors decide? C, which is the white elephant present on site. There must be a moral to this tale. Once bitten, do not make the same mistake again. So, councillors, listen to your voters on Silver Hill and do what we want, not what you think we want. We now wait with bated breath whether the council will stay with Henderson or pluck up the courage and start afresh. We do not want another white elephant. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Now here's a local perspective on a national problem. It's headed Support Farmers. Sir, my grandfather was a dairy farmer, and I have wonderful childhood memories of getting up early to milk the cows, delivering the previous day's milk to our many customers before coming home to milk the cows again. I love this job, and the milk, fresh from the tank and not homogenised, was so full of flavour. I'm very saddened to hear of the plight of our struggling dairy farmers. Over the last 5 years, the number of dairy farms in Hampshire has reduced from 100 to 85. And nationally, every day, a farmer is forced out of business. It's said that supermarkets are to blame by paying the farmer less than it costs to produce the milk. Well, I'm sure I'm not the only one who would like to do more to support our dairy farmers and would be happy to pay a little more for my milk. One solution is for dairy farmers to cut out the supermarkets and sell milk direct to small suppliers and farm shops. This is what Ivy House Dairy Farm in Frome, Somerset, and many more do, and it appears to be very successful. I would far prefer to buy my milk direct from the farm instead of the supermarket. I've just looked at the Farmers Weekly website, where there's a map of farms that sell milk direct to the public, and sadly, there do not appear to be any in Hampshire. If anyone knows of any dairy farmers in Hampshire where one can buy milk direct from the farm, perhaps they could please let me and others know. And that's from Juliet Pattinson, who lives in Micheldever.
Now a letter from Rob Parker, Back Street, Winchester, under the heading Eco Energy Woes. Sir, as a member of Winchester Green Party, I very much agree with Ray Cobbett, letters July 30th, and in particular the devastation being heaped upon the renewable energy industry. Another item to add to the list is the potential removal of cooperative status enjoyed by local investors in renewable energy schemes. The Treasury dislikes this business model, which gives one member one vote and every member a say in their organisation, and restricts access by corporate investors. Once all the small-scale renewable energy schemes have been swept aside, this will allow the Tories to resurrect the fear of lights going out, followed by centralised, easy-to-control nuclear power, run by EDF, French, and financed by Chinese banks.
And from Helen Nelson, Marjorie tribute. Sir, Marjorie Pooley was a well-known figure in Winchester with her stalls, which she set up in the Battlecross each month to raise money for animal welfare charities. She died in her home in Ropley on July the 13th and will be sadly missed by all who knew and worked with her, Chronicle August the 6th. Marjorie was totally committed to the cause of animal rights, and her own obituary wrote, "My eyes were opened at the somewhat late age of around 45 to the cruelty involved in the livestock industry and those in the medical world, for instance drug companies, and those practicing vivisection. I have given up my life to raising awareness and to fight for these creatures on whom we depend so much." And certainly Marjorie became a bonny fighter, campaigning against every form of animal cruelty. She attended all the demonstrations at Dover and Shoreham against live exports, travelled to Cambridge and Oxford to protest against the building of new vivisection laboratories, and took part in all the big demonstrations in London. She also set up her own local groups, Winchester Animal Concern, which grew and flourished with the help of other like-minded people. Also a keen conservationist, Marjorie followed a strict vegan diet. Marjorie was an inspiration to us all, so full of energy and completely unstoppable. She's a great loss to the animal rights movement and will be sadly missed by us all. Helen Nelson, Broom Lane, Gosport.
Now here's a regular correspondent, Roy Stanger of Worthy Down in Winchester, calling our attention to the state of local hedges. Sir, like many people in Winchester and the surrounding area who pay council tax for services like the maintenance of our highways and roads, I'm amazed at the state of the hedges, traffic and speed signs, and the upkeep of our roundabouts on the entry and exits from this wonderful city of ours, the old capital of England. Travelling from one side of Winchester to the other on a daily basis, in my opinion, the following areas need urgent action if we're to be proud of our home territory. And Roy then gives us a list. Firstly, Christmas Hill, the Water Tower roundabout adjoining the A34, Three Maids Hill roundabout and the Central Reservation leading down Andover Road, the Central Reservation by Waitrose and the Tegdown turnoff, the roundabout at Chilbolton Avenue and Romsey Road, the roundabout at Badger Farm Road and Romsey Road, and the Park and Ride roundabout and M3 Twyford turnoff. We as a community praise the volunteers, normally retired citizens, who collect rubbish from our streets within Winchester, but as paying customers to the County Council, our wishes for a well-turned-out city and surrounding area is not happening. When did we last see a team of County Council workers doing these tasks? And Roy concludes by saying, "Let's make the appearance of this outstanding city of ours a showpiece to us and the visitors that come and observe our surroundings."
Now, a letter from Roger Chatterton Newman of Stretton's Copse, Milland. Truth of Dame. Sir, may I be allowed to comment on the article in last week's Chronicle regarding my distant connection, Dame Alice Lyle of Moyles Court? Dame Alice was the daughter of Sir White, not Sir Walter, Beaconsaw or Beaconshaw of Moyles Court. And the story of her trial was exaggerated greatly by Whig politicians of a later generation. She did not, despite popular tradition, sleep for most of the 6-hour trial, but made a spirited defence of her innocence and interrupted Lord Jeffreys on a number of occasions. She also challenged several potential members of the jury. It is true that the judge had difficulty in controlling his temper at times, but only in the case of prevaricating witnesses. The situation was not helped by the stifling heat in the closely packed Great Hall, or by the painful kidney disease from which Jeffreys suffered and which was to cause his death. The jury did not, again despite popular belief, acquit her three times, although they returned after half an hour to express a doubt over whether or not Dame Alice had known John Hicks to have been in Monmouth's army. The sentence passed was burning at the stake. Horrific, but the penalty in those days for women convicted of treason. Lord Jeffreys told Dame Alice that should she confess the whole matter, her execution might be respited, and in fact seems to have gone to unusual lengths to ensure she understood proceedings throughout the trial. He allowed an appeal to be sent to King James II, who substituted the axe for the stake. Dame Alice was thus beheaded, not as stated in the article, hanged, in Winchester Marketplace on September 2nd, 1685. She stepped onto the scaffold through a window of what today is the Eclipse Inn, where she had spent her last night. Unusually, in the case of a convicted traitor, her estates were not attainted, remaining in her family until sold to the Normantons in the early 19th century.
Thank you. After that letter stepping back in time, we're going to step back in time with the historical item. So 200 years, I think, Nikki.
Which, August the 21st, 1815. Trial for defection. The only feature of importance contained in the foreign journals this week is the trial and condemnation of Le Bedoyer. At the trial, the reporter, judge advocate, is commenting on the consequences of his base defection, said, "The attempt of Colonel La Bedoyer now holds the first rank amongst the crimes that for several months deprived France of her legitimate king, caused the invasion of our country, and conducted the country to the brink of a precipice, the depth of which one trembles to fathom. It is his defection that we owe all other defections, defeat of Waterloo and the invasion of our provinces." And a second piece, curious new resident. For the last 4 months, the curiosity of the people residing in the neighbourhood of Delamere Forest has been much excited by a middle-aged female who has taken up her residence there. She has erected a hut of turf and oak boughs in which she resides. She says she is a native of Germany, but speaks the French and English languages with great fluency and converses in a very superior manner on every subject, particularly politics. Her establishment consists of a girl of about 12 years of age, who is to remain with her until she attains the age of 21. She keeps two asses for the purpose of drawing a little wagon, and two goats, which supply her with milk and butter.
100 years ago, August 21st, 1915. Soldiers send a gift. Some sick and wounded soldiers in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital have lately forwarded to Serbia a beautiful coverlet they have knitted to be given to a wounded Serbian brother-in-arms. The blanket was knitted in squares of brightly coloured wool and warmly lined with flannel. It measures 6 foot by 4 foot, and was made by the following men: Sergeant Hobday, Corporal Fogden, Rifleman Handley, Rifleman Scotton, Rifleman Morey, Rifleman Gartside, Bandsman Walton, Rifleman Boyland, Rifleman Cook, Rifleman Cranham, Driver Steele of the Australian Ammunition Park, and Boy Scout Ivor Meredith. And the second piece here, bad news from the war. Mr. and Mrs. J. Burnett of 13 Boundary Street, Winchester, have received official information under date August 17th from the Infantry Record Office in Exeter, where the records of the Hampshire Regiment are kept, that their son, Private John Burnett of the 10th Hampshire Regiment, has been wounded in the Dardanelles. This report comes with greater sadness because it's only 2 or 3 weeks since it was recorded that his only brother, Private H. Burnett, had been killed in action, being one of the first of the 1st 4th Hants Battalion to yield his life fighting for our cause.
And now, 50 years ago, August 21st, 1965. Two items. Here's the first. Appeal at Carnival. An appeal for help in raising at least £1,000 for local good causes was made by Miss Jennifer Whitlock when she was crowned as the 1965 Eastleigh Carnival Queen at a picturesque ceremony on Saturday. Held during a successful Regency Fair, organised at the Town Hall by the Elderly People's Organisations of the Borough, the coronation ceremony attracted a large audience and provided the carnival effort with a promising start. An 18-year-old clerk in the Borough Engineers Department of Eastleigh Borough Council, Miss Whitlock is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. W.D. Whitlock of The Recess, Eastleigh. And the second article, Works Programme. This week sees the conclusion of a very successful first season's work by the Ministry of Public Buildings and Works on the Roman villa in Westwood Sparsholt, hidden in a tangle of honeysuckle, bramble and wild strawberry. The remains cover perhaps 2 acres of forest, which the Forestry Commission planted with beech and cypress 5 years ago. This year's excavations have brought to light a large courtyard villa with buildings ranged on at least 3 sides of a rectangular walled farmyard.
And now, 25 years ago, August the 17th, 1990, 2 articles. Shopping changes. Eastleigh Town Centre could be the beneficiary of a massive cutback in the joint Marks and Spencer and Sainsbury out-of-town shopping scheme near the M27 at Hedge End. Think Borough Council officers. Senior planner Colin Peters admitted at last week's Development Control Subcommittee that they had been worried about the impact of the mega centre originally proposed at Hedge End. The plan had been for a 180,000 square foot Saver centre side by side with a 90,000 square foot Marks and Spencers. But now Sainsbury have taken over Saver centre and are only planning a 90,000 square foot supermarket. And the second article, oil price concerns. Recent events in the Arabian Gulf have raised farmers' concerns about the price of oil and consequently farm costs. NFU technical advisor William White points out, in common with other industries, farmers are very critical of the way in which oil companies were so quick to up their prices as a result of the Gulf situation. The UK has sufficient stocks of oil to run the country for 100 days, and it is widely known that other Gulf countries could easily overcome the cutbacks in supply by increasing their exports correspondingly. So that concludes the historical items, and now we move on to Chronicle Comment, First Person and Belgarum. So, Nikki, Chronicle Comment, please.
Headed, time to knock heads together and quickly. A dispute between Carla Holmes and Winchester College over the value of land at Barton Farm threatens to delay the scheme and hamper the City Council's ability to protect the green fringes from developers. If this drags on and no one seems to know when it will be resolved, the Council will be unable to show it has an adequate new housing supply. Already Lyndon Homes has launched plans for 350 homes at Pitt. To say this is unsatisfactory is an understatement. Heads need to be knocked together quickly. Winchester College has an enviable reputation for land management. It would be ironic if its desire to maximise its income from Barton Farm should lead to development elsewhere.
First person this week is by Joanna Lewis, and it's headed, Staycation Lets Me Fall in Love. And maybe I should explain that a staycation is a holiday where you stay at home. So instead of going on a vacation, you stay at home on a staycation. And here we go. Joanna says, there are many advantages to having a staycation here in August, rather other than being able to park in central Winchester of a morning. For starters, staying at home means no startling reminder of the huge chasm that exists between the sexes. Holiday man packs in 5 minutes and leave the house like a modern-day Dick Whittington, carrying his bits in the equivalent of a handkerchief on a stick. Meanwhile, holiday woman spends weeks preparing and leaves the house carrying the equivalent of the contents of a smaller house. Notes, by the way, she has usually packed for at least two others in the process. Not taking a summer holiday means that you can abandon being beach body ready. So, no months of miserable carb deprivation. Instead, a new and generous timetable. Like an Olympian, I'm now officially working towards Rio 2016. But rather than breaking any records, my goal is to be wearing something other than a beach towel. I've also had none of that last-minute panic about what clothes to take, whether the latest holiday look will miraculously emerge. There's no need to send your favourite evening dress to the dry cleaners and risk, as a friend of mine did, slipping on its transparent plastic cover discarded on the floor in a packing frenzy. She slipped and fell into her hard suitcase, breaking two ribs in the process. If you staycate, there's also no chance of the passport nightmare. That moment 3 days before flying, after finally finding the passports in the bottom bedside drawer under that unfinished novel, a quick glance reveals they're out of date. This results in a frantic, deranged dash to some sweaty backstreet office where you offer to sell your soul or your mother-in-law to have them renewed in time. The stress leaves you so drained it's not a holiday you need, but a week in the Priory. Holidaying at home obviously means you don't waste days getting there, stuck in traffic, holed up in airports, or, in our case a few years ago, being misled by out-of-date sat-nav information. Two wrong turns, and suddenly we were going to the south of France via the Arc de Triomphe. Nor are there any nasty surprises when you get to your destination where the accommodation looks like it's been styled on a maze prison protest. There are no awkward bathroom incidents from Greek plumbing, with a flush weaker than its banking system. Locks that don't work, or in my case, after washing my hair, to find my brother-in-law's used dental floss somehow weaved into it. And you can wave goodbye to the disastrous holiday animal encounter, like the so-called tame rabbits in the animal theme park that suddenly turn into flesh-eating monsters at the sight of a three-year-old's fingers. Or that camel I choose to ride majestically up the valley floor at Petra in Jordan, discovering too late that it was a prize-winning racer. Its owner smiled as he swished the whip, abandoning me to my fate, a reenactment of the final scene in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when Harrison Ford hares through the pencil-thin canyon pursued by an earthquake, and I was wearing kitten heels, for goodness sake. And finally, when you do return home and collect the dogs from the kennels, there's no risk of finding a punishment wee in your slippers the next morning. But the best thing about a staycation is that you can fall in love with the place all over again. My holiday romance with Winchester has included a poignant visit to the Royal Green Jackets Museum to reflect on the First World War, hearing an outstanding recital of the cathedral, and importantly, supporting local independent retailer month. I've purchased some unique items already, including a large metallic moose head. Try getting one of those into your overhead locker. We're all so lucky to live here. It's worth fighting to keep it special.
Thank you. Now we're going to have some articles by Belgarum, I think.
Yes, three articles from Belgarum. The first under the heading, Driver Chooses Wrong Place to Turn Around. There are better places in Winchester to do a U-turn. Yet one BMW driver didn't let that stop them when they careered into the metal railings along St. George's Street after coming round the corner from Upper Brook Street a little too quickly. The unknown driver fled the scene last Thursday afternoon after smashing the metal bars opposite McDonald's. It's just a shame that they left their license plate still mangled in the crumpled metalwork. At least it should not be too difficult to track the driver down, if need be. And there are two photographs, one from across the road, I guess outside McDonald's, looking over towards the railings, and another close-up of the wrecked railings and the evidence, identifying evidence of the offending driver, the registration plate. Second item, shiny, happy people in city. It only confirms what many of us already knew, but a new study has claimed Winchester residents are among Britain's happiest people. Our fine city is second only to Salisbury for richness and fulfilment, according to a survey of 2,000 people across the country. The study was commissioned by cheesemakers Anchor Cheddar, whose number crunchers studied attitudes towards success, money, family, leisure, and more. Dairy preferences were not discussed. It found that the happiest people enjoy imperfections, avoid confrontation, and value memories over possessions, while those earning £20,000 to £35,000 sport bigger smiles than high earners of up to £200,000. They also don't mind the occasional severe traffic congestion. Our ancient capital beat Derby, Swansea and Preston to a podium finish, with Sunderland coming third. Bill Graham would like to hear from the married Wintonian fisherman, aged over 65, with two children, who earns between £20,000 and £35,000. He seems to have come out rather well. And finally, Run 10 Miles for Diabetes UK charity. Winchester residents are being urged to get active for a good cause. Diabetes UK is looking for people to take part in the Great South Run. The 10-mile race takes place in Portsmouth on October 25th. Lewis Honeywell, regional fundraiser, said, "The money raised will help us to make a real difference to many people affected by diabetes. Call 0345 123 2399 to sign up. That number is 0345 123 2399.
Thank you. Now we have the announcements, and we start with what's on. And on Bank Holiday Monday, the 31st of August, there's an organ recital in Winchester Cathedral at 4 p.m. Tickets are £10. Information from the box office on 01962 857 275. On the same day, Bank Holiday Monday, there's a fete at Easton on the Village Green between 1:30 and 4:30. On Saturday, the 5th of September, there are two shows: Littleton and Hairstock Show at Littleton by the Village Hall from 1 p.m. And Alsford Show is at Tichborne Park between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. And to get to that, there's a free shuttle bus running from the Doctor's Surgery in Alsford to the showground, and that runs from 09:30. And at Mayflower Theatre between the 8th and the 12th of September at various times, The Glenn Miller Story is on. Box office for the Mayflower is 02380 711811. Lighting up time ends Friday the 21st of August at 6:01 a.m. and begins at 8:15 p.m. And Wednesday the 26th of August, next week, it ends at 6:08 a.m. and begins at 8:05 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news from the paper. Nikki.
And this one. 5,000 say sack breastfeed DJ. Hampshire residents are calling for Radio Solent DJ to be sacked following comments he made about breastfeeding. regular listeners have vented their fury on social media after Alex Dyke's live broadcast last Wednesday, during which he called breastfeeding unnatural. People have taken to Twitter and Facebook for the Stone Age BBC presenter to go, sparking national interest across the media. One tweeter even referred to him as a misogynist pig. The BBC was inundated with complaints after, the DJ said librarian-type moustached women should not be allowed to breastfeed in public. Gained over 5,000 signatures. A petition gained over 5,000 signatures. A counter-petition was launched, but by Monday had attracted 170 names. During the broadcast, he said, "It's 2015. Ladies, mums, we don't like breastfeeding in public. Honestly, we don't. I experienced this yesterday. I was on a bus and there was a lady on this bus. She was quite a big girl and she had a toddler with her. She starts to breastfeed her baby on the bus. I don't know where to look. She's putting me in an embarrassing situation. I didn't really realise what was going on. I just thought she was cuddling a baby and then I looked over and I realised. I wanted to look away but the bus was packed. Breastfeeding is unnatural. I know it's natural, but it's kind of unnatural. It's the kind of thing which should be done in quiet and private nursery. We don't want it in public. It was okay in the Stone Age when we didn't know no better and people didn't even have their own teeth. A public area is not a place for it. It's not a great look." A spokesman for the BBC said Mr. Dyke has since apologised for his comments on air. It has made it clear to Alex that his comments were unacceptable and he has apologised for any offence caused, she said. Mr. Dyke encouraged some callers to phone in. He said to one woman, "Some women see this as their rite of passage. Making love is the most natural thing in the world, but you wouldn't do it on the number 15. I blame the Earth Mothers, the ones who wear Hessian." One of his callers, named Peter, responded, "I think it's a travesty that you're trying to classify women like that."
Now, here's some happy news for some of our local young people. Of course, it's the season where we get our exam results, isn't it? Headline, Simmons claims record top results. It was a great day for Peter Simmons students when they gathered to celebrate their A-level results, and particularly for one happy couple who are both off to Durham come September. Lovebirds Gordon Hawks and Indy Jago are going to Durham together after smashing their A-levels. Gordon, 18, of Fleming Road, Week, got two A-stars, three A's in maths, further maths, physics, chemistry and general studies. Indy, who travels all the way in from Fittleton in Wiltshire, got one A-star, two A's and a B in human biology, maths, psychology and history. He's off to do maths and she's doing archaeology. She said, "It's actually because of time, team. I was a bit sad when Mick died, and I wanted to do archaeology because it's just fun. There's so much time that we can uncover, although I got my place at Durham first and Gordon followed me." It's been another record year for Simmons students, with a 99% pass rate of A-levels, 93% pass rate for AS, 83% achieved A-star to C at A-level, 63% of which were A-star to B. The AS pass rate for A to C grades was 68%, with 48% achieving A to B. The school's highest achievers were twins Sam and Luke Dell of Hedge End, who managed to bag 9 A-stars, 3 A's and a B between them. The 18-year-olds of Billington Gardens couldn't believe their grades. Sam, who earned himself 6 A-stars in maths, further maths, physics, English literature, extended project and general studies, is going to read maths at Warwick. He's the single highest achiever in the school this year, something which he said will lead to ultimate bragging rights. Brother Luke is going to Cambridge to do geography after getting an A-star in maths, geography and extended project, and A's in German, English literature and general studies. Stephen Carville, the head teacher, said, "I'm astounded. The results last year were excellent, but they're even better this year. There are these huge numbers of A's, and that makes me feel very humble. And that's accompanied by half a dozen photographs of broadly grinning young people, all looking absolutely thrilled to bits, as they're entitled to do, after seeing all their years of hard work pay off.
Marching in to New Euro's song. It is their very own song for Europe. Saints fans and musicians, James Knights from Winchester and Mark Lawrence from Valley Park, have penned a song for their beloved team to mark the club's first European campaign in 12 years. And don't worry, I'm not going to sing it. Now they hope fans will be singing Southampton in Europa as they watch their favourite team walk out onto the St Mary's tonight against FC Midtjylland. James and Mark wanted to craft a song showing their appreciation for Saints manager Ronald Koeman. Band promoter James, 36, said they wanted to do something which fans of bigger sides like Manchester United do. James of Little Minster Street said, "We almost thought we'd left it too late, or that someone else had already submitted a song. We just sat down and threw together a few notes. It's been on the table for about 6 months, but we only knuckled down to it about 1 month ago. The main influence, really, was that all those other teams, Manchester United, Liverpool, there's never been a really successful track for our generation, for Southampton. The idea is just to go, is just to up the tempo and praise how well the team are doing." Vocalist James, who is part of the band Scarlet Soho, wrote the foundations for a song in his living room, while Mark, with band Broken Links, added the guitar parts to the dance tune. Pair recorded in their own homes, with both of them doing the vocals and playing the other instruments featured in the track. And there's this photograph of James and Mark in their football shirts, with 1980s Saints star Ruben Agbula in the centre, waving a Saints scarf above his head.
Bigger breakfast at cafe following overhaul. A cafe in a village near Winchester is promising its customers a slice of the good life after reopening after a major overhaul. The newly extended cafe has reopened at the Good Life Farm shop in Springvale Road, Headbournworthy, and now has extra capacity for customers. The extension has also allowed the team at the cafe to offer extra options for breakfast and lunch, while there is a new seating area. The reopened eatery is holding a special launch day this Saturday, where customers will be able to eat for 10% off normal prices all day. There will also be an opportunity to enter a raffle draw to win a Good Life Farm Shop food hamper worth £100, while customers can sample the wares of local food producers who will be visiting. Marketing coordinator Katie Westwood said, "We are all very excited about the future and what it promises for us at the Good Life. We can't help but get carried away with our ideas, and are already wondering what will be in store for us next." Miss Westwood added, "We hope that the new extension will confirm the Good Life as the ultimate foodie destination in Winchester."
A compilation of charming stories. More than 85 years ago, a slim volume was published which brought together stories, both true and more fanciful, about the Hampshire village of Ropley. Entitled Annals of Old Ropley, the book was compiled by Miss Mariana S. Hagen, who had lived in Ropley and amongst Ropley folk since her earliest childhood. A copy of this 1929 book, out of print for many years, which gives a fascinating glimpse of country village life during the early part of the last century, can now be found, thanks to modern information technology, on the internet. The book's author gives a delightful description of Ropley as it was when the publication first appeared. Miss Hagen says, "It was much celebrated for its bees, and it was said that William the Conqueror always obtained his honey from this place. This betokens a land of flowers, and indeed, I always knew it as such." According to the book, there was a cottage in Ropley which was haunted by the ghost of a cat, which would appear at various places around the home of an elderly woman. Sometimes you would find it sitting by the hearth, and then it would get up, walk across the room, and suddenly disappear without passing through the door, records the book. The old woman was convinced that the ghostly cat was in fact the spirit of her dead mother, and said, "I knew it was my mother from the way it walked. It was just like her walk. It walked exactly like mother." Another Rockley story retells a local legend that's similar to other versions of the same tale that is said to have taken place in many different rural settings. Miss Hagen says, "Once there was a wedding, and the terrible mistake it turned out was made of not inviting the fairies of the neighbourhood to the festivities, and on the way home from the church, the whole wedding party was turned to stone." Like many other country villages, Rockley also has a number of curious remedies, including a remarkable suggestion to cure epilepsy. The book says, "An old woman who died but a short time ago frequently said that a page from the New Testament, eaten daily between a slice of bread and butter, was an unfailing remedy for epileptic fits. She had, so she said, consumed nearly the whole book in this way, and was greatly benefited." Another concerns an old local man who lived in Rockley in the mid-19th century with the surname of Thorpe, and who claimed to be a wizard. It's understood that this man Thorpe was in the habit of sleeping in a large oven for the sake of the warmth which it afforded, recalls the book, and one morning he was found there dead, which is really unsurprising. Finally, the book explains the derivation of the name Rockley, which is taken from the Old English for lea, a meadow that's measured by a rope. According to the internet website, the author died in 1932, and her book was fully scanned in 2003 as a tribute to the considerable contribution to the life of Rockley by Miss Hagen, both in her lifetime and the 21st century.
Funds given to children's play camps. Alsford Rotary Club has presented a £300 cheque to help organise children's summer play camps. Mark Porter, chairman of the Rotary Service Committee, made the presentation to Julie Mountain, chief executive of Play Learning Life Community Interests, at the Sunhill Wildlife Pond at the infant and junior schools with a group of youngsters. The money will be used to buy equipment and materials for the activity camps that Julie runs for the children of Alsford and surrounding villages in the holidays. Play Learning Life, a community interest company, promotes the importance of outdoor learning and provides specialist advice. Rotary began its support for PLL a couple of years ago when it built a base for the shed that Julie uses to hold all her adventure equipment. She runs an outdoor activity class at Sun Hill Infant School every week using the Rotary Restored Wildlife Pond. And there is a wonderful photograph of a group of young children, Mark Porter presenting the £300 cheque to Julie, and another helper. They must be at the wildlife pond in this photograph because some of the children have goggles on, and I guess they put their face into the water and look at the tadpoles and things like that. And they all seem to have sticks in their hands, all seem to be having a wonderful time, plenty of smiles about anyway.
And a slightly different take on the A-level success. A mature student joins teens as she celebrates A-levels. And there's a photograph of her, Hayley Cook, a star student, age 29, looking very like Meryl Streep. It's not just been the teenagers who have been having all the success with A-levels. Mature students across Hampshire had as much reason to celebrate as their 18-year-old peers, as they also gain places at such prestigious universities as Manchester, King's, Southampton and Surrey. Hayley Cool is one of them. At the age of 29, she wanted to make some changes, and last week she took home some brilliant results, like so many other Peter Simmons students. At school, I didn't know what I wanted to do and subsequently didn't take advantage of the opportunities I had, she said. I have worked in nuclear recruitment for 12 years, and with some encouragement from my partner, Emma, I finally decided to follow my dreams of becoming a midwife. And if that wasn't enough, staff and students nominated her as this year's Star Student. The award goes to someone who not only achieves good results, but also helps out other students too. She added, "I was completely blown away winning the Star Student Award. It was very touching, and the £50 book voucher will come in very handy for midwifery books when I start at Nottingham University. Enrolling in the Access course was the best decision I've ever made. It's been an incredible 2 years, excuse me, both academically and personally. I recommend the Peter Simmons Access course to anyone wanting to further their education."
This piece is headed "Hours of Worship Extended by Vote." Worshipping hours have been extended for a new church in South Wanston despite concerns over noise. Trustees of a new gospel hall to be built on the current site of Venter UK in West Hill Road North asked to extend Sunday worship from the original planning permission from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. to allow for Holy Communion. In a bid to reduce the impact of potential noise, the Winchester Gospel Hall Trust said no musical instruments would be played, no music would be played outside, and worshippers would be asked to enter and leave the site in accordance with the noise management plan. Councillor Malcolm Wright said, "Sunday is a day of religion and rest. This proposal would allow for 10 or maybe 20 cars to pass through the village in a very short time and at 5:30 in the morning. I feel that this proposal will clearly be detrimental to the health of some residents of South Wanston. People can celebrate their religion, but they must be considerate and reasonable." Councillor Dibden said, "I'm enormously sympathetic to your religion, but I'm also sympathetic to people who are asleep at 5:30 on a Sunday morning." Councillor David McLean said, "The brethren are respectful. They are quiet." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, the council leader, said, "At the moment, the 6 a.m. services take place in the community members' homes, and there have been no complaints. The only noise complaint there has been was when one car drove onto a gravel surface. There are two dwellings close to the site, but if one family is affected, then it would not be right to permit the development. I would draw your attention to the experience of residents on Park Road, where they've been operating services at 6 in the morning and 9 o'clock at night without complaints and concerns. It's quite possible to coexist, and I'm quite confident that the peaceful members of the South Wanston community will make every effort not to disturb their neighbours." And eventually the council has voted in 7-2 in favour of the change.
Poetry and prose to remember late Ken. A Winchester woman has written a book in memory of her late husband, almost 50 years to the day she lost him. Carol Kennedy, 89, is now a published author after putting together a collection of poems and short stories to raise money for the Multiple Sclerosis Society after losing her husband Ken to the disease in 1965. She wanted a fitting tribute to his memory, and what better way than to put it all into words? Pebble in the Pond is a memoir of prose and poetry, and the proceeds will all go to charity. Or I should say, the charity. Mrs. Kennedy of Kiln Lane married Ken in 1950. Together, they had three daughters, Tessa, Val, and Jane. After his death, she retrained as a social worker, practising in Kent before moving to Branbridge in 1976. The joke was that I went to a 90th birthday party of a friend last year, and to mark it, she jumped out of an aeroplane. I thought I couldn't do that in 100 years, so it was suggested I do this. I had the idea of putting together a small collection of poems and stories to raise money for the Multiple Sclerosis Society, she added. My husband died of MS in that year, so 2015 will be the 50th anniversary of his death. The same year will also mark the 50th anniversary of the founding of a branch of the MS Society in Bexley, where he worked as a family doctor. The branch adapted a bungalow in Eastbourne and named it Kennedy Cottage. My hope is that any profits will contribute both to research into MS and to the maintenance of Kennedy Cottage, which has a lasting place in my heart. To buy the book, visit apebbleinthepond.co.uk. apebbleinthepond.co.uk. And there's a photograph of Carol in a beautiful garden with a pond in the background, looking very gracious lady.
Bus route saved. A threatened Hampshire bus service has been given a reprieve, but it may only be temporary. Stagecoach wanted to scrap the service from Guildford to Alton and instead terminate the buses at Farnham. Many travellers were able to catch the 64 at Alton to Winchester via Alsford. One traveller, Valerie Monaghan, from Godalming in Surrey, a regular visitor to Winchester, described it as a heartless plan. The plan sparked anger and a public meeting in Alton on August the 5th. In a statement, Michael Watson, Managing Director of Stagecoach South, said, "We have listened to the views of our passengers and will reinstate the 65 route until July 2016. Over the next 11 months, Stagecoach will work hard with the community to identify a sustainable solution which safeguards a longer-term solution for the service."
And sports news. Here's a report on Winchester City's latest match. Winchester City's free-scoring run ground to a resounding halt in their 0-0 draw with Yate Town in the Southern League South and West on Saturday at Lodge Road on Saturday, it said twice. On a major positive note, though, and something that will please City, is a clean sheet, which hasn't been forthcoming in their first two opening games. Up to now, it's been a case of you score two and we'll score three at the Denplan City ground, since their arrival in the South and West League. A 7-2 win over Bridgwater Town on the open day and a 6-5 win over Wimborne last Tuesday saw City concede 7 goals in just 2 games, and had their forward line not been as prolific as they had been, then it would have been a fairly disastrous start. However, thanks to the unreal form of Warren Bentley, it's been an eye-catching start from last term's Sydenham's division runners-up. It all changed against the Bluebells, though, who've conceded 1 and scored 1 in their 3 games so far, a stark contrast to 20 goals for Paul Masters' side. City ran the changes at Yate with skipper Lee Mills returning from holiday and 19-year-old former Basingstoke Town goalkeeper Brendan Norris replacing Sam Somerville, who's now been released. There were chances for Winchester to score, but none of them yielded an end product. 20 minutes had passed when Winchester had their first real chance as Dan Cann swung in a dangerous cross. Striker Zach Glasspool controlled well, but his shot went straight at the keeper. Bentley, who struck 9 goals in 3 goal games this term, found Adam Taz Roberts in the second period, but the quick winger fired inches wide.
Wolvesey Palace closed. One of Winchester's greatest historic attractions has been closed for most of the summer. Wolvesey Palace is shut because its owners, English Heritage, cannot find anyone to open and close it every day. The closure is annoying tourist guides, as the medieval palace is on many guided tours. "We've had to divert tours. It is a big disappointment," said one. In a statement, English Heritage said, "This summer, the incumbent keykeeper for Wolvesey Castle left after 6 years and, unfortunately, recruitment for a replacement has been unsuccessful. We have explored various interim solutions for the site to remain open while a new keykeeper is recruited. However, these have not come to fruition, and reluctantly, we have no option but to close the site for the time being." Should any readers be interested in applying to become the new keykeeper, We would be pleased to hear from them.
Scouts take on challenges for charity. Six scouts from Hampshire Scout Expeditions are gearing up for a challenge of a lifetime when they embark on a polar expedition in October 2018. Oliver Robinson and his twin brother Tom, 25, along with Matt Prince, 22, all from Winchester, will be joined by Joe Doherty, 22, from Andover, Adrian Ellis, 19, from Lymington, and Dave Holmes-Evans, 21, from Bournemouth. To get ready for the challenge in aid of Motor Neurone Diseases Association, MNDA, they are taking on 3 years of gruelling challenges. So far, they have dragged a tower 29 miles from Salisbury to Winchester and also completed 200 climbs of Stanage Edge. Now the group are set to go one further and take on a half Ironman triathlon on the Isle of Wight on August the 22nd. Their 2018 challenge will see them cover more than 700 miles in each direction from Hercules Inlet to the pole. And there's a wonderful photograph taken from ground level with a flash lighting them up. And behind them is a steel grey sea and looming dark grey clouds. And they're dressed variously in their Lycra waterproof clothes, obviously about to start their Ironman triathlon or get in training for it. Their arms are folded, their hands on the hips. They mean business.
Sorry, I was interested in the story. I do apologise. A local criminal bought to book. The headline is £377,000 VAT fraud. Woman is jailed. The owner of a Winchester marketing agency who fraudulently claimed more than £377,000 in VAT refunds has been jailed for 30 months after she produced a string of fake invoices to try and cover her tracks. Louisa Pryor and her business, Brand Development Management Limited, were investigated after HM Revenue and Customs became suspicious of a series of VAT refund claims submitted between 2007 and 2012. Pryor, whose business purported to book UK advertising space for an Italian company, was not only producing false invoices so that she could reclaim VAT, but was illegally reclaiming VAT on invoices she claimed had already been paid by her clients. Pryor, an Italian national of Napoli and Ampfield, also rented property in Kingsworthy. And at the time of her fraud, she was known by her maiden name, Maria Luisa Carmela Occhioni. John Cooper, Assistant Director Criminal Investigation, HMRC, said, Louisa Pryor stole more than £377,000 of taxpayers' money, knowing full well that she was not entitled to claim VAT refunds. She produced false invoices in an attempt to hide the fraud. The money that she stole should have been spent on running the UK's public services, and not as her personal piggy bank. This type of fraud is a serious criminal offence, and today's case will serve as a warning to others who attempted to play the system in this way. HMRC officers visited Pryor, who also used a variety of aliases throughout the fraud, several times, but each time she was unable to produce all of the relevant paperwork to support her claims. But, during a visit to her home in June 2013... officers became suspicious after she simply printed out a number of invoices before handing them over as legitimate business records. Investigations continued, and Pryor was arrested and later charged. At Winchester Crown Court on June the 11th, she was sentenced to 2.5 years in jail. Sentencing, Mr. Recorder Ian Laurie QC said, "You have to go to prison for the calculated fraud of the revenue. You persistently indulged in making claims over a considerable period of time. HMRC will seek to recover criminal proceeds."
University placed among UK's best. Students have rated Winchester University the fourth best in England. It has welcomed its highest ever ranking in the National Student Survey, with many courses coming out on top across the country. Final year undergraduates express 100% satisfaction with courses including history, politics, business management, and archaeology. Including medical and art schools, Winchester came seventh in England and joint eighth across Britain, with a satisfaction rate of 92%, up 3 points on last year. The Student Union was ranked seventh out of 108 English universities. Vice-Chancellor Professor Joy Carter said, "We work hard in partnership with the students to ensure students reach their full potential and enjoy their time studying at Winchester."
College energy plant proposal. Sparsholt College has unveiled plans for a new renewable energy plant near Winchester. The anaerobic digester, a large boiler turning grass into gas, is expected to produce power for the equivalent of nearly 5,000 homes per year. But the plans, announced alongside a college training initiative for the green gas sector, have worried parish councillors and some countryside campaigners. College chiefs say the facility, branded the Green Gas Mill, will supply the campus and national grid, as well as enabling a new connection pushing down gas prices for locals. Sparsholt Parish councillors are concerned about the plant's smell and size, as well as tractors using the village's single-track roads to carry grass and maize for processing. Douglas Patterson, chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, has previously described the plant as a monster in green clothing, warning it will intrude on the village and leave a poor carbon footprint. Meanwhile, the college announced plans to create a centre of excellence for environmental technologies, training professionals in the green gas industry. Tim Jackson, principal, said, "It's an exciting time for the college in developing our status as a centre for demonstration of environmental technologies, which is being supported by Ecotricity and the Enterprise M3 Local Enterprise Partnership. We're already significantly expanding our rooftop solar panel array. We've submitted a planning application for a wind turbine. We are intending to expand our wood fuel technologies. And we're now putting ourselves at the centre of what is the future of gas generation in Britain. The centre will be a key resource to develop specialist professionals to work for the green gas industry, training engineers, plant managers and technicians in what is a jobs growth area across the agriculture, energy, waste, water and food processing sectors." Dale Vince, founder of Ecotricity, the firm building the digester, said biogas generation was a greener alternative to fracking. He said green gas is a big opportunity for Britain. It can make a big contribution to reducing carbon emissions and making us more energy independent.
Now here's an intriguing headline. Discover past heroes. Have you ever wondered what it was like to be a British soldier during the times of Napoleon? Pop along to the Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum and meet a 95th rifleman who will be sharing with visitors his tales from the road to Waterloo. Rifleman Revel will be on duty on Wednesday, August the 26th, with his first session of storytelling taking place at 11:30 a.m. Visitors can also explore the new Waterloo exhibition with the refurbished battlefield model. Children's crafts will also be available from 10 to 12 in the morning. Situated adjacent to Winchester's Great Hall and within easy walking distance of the city centre, the Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum opened in 1989 and is one of the best regimental museums in the country. It's also one of Winchester's five military museums. Visited by thousands every year, the museum records, visually, graphically and entertainingly, the history of three of the finest and most famous regiments of the British Army. Laid out chronologically, the museum's displays tell of the part played by the regiments in campaigning for peace over the last 2.5 centuries, and how the regiments approached the soldiering and readiness to adopt new ideas were always ahead of the rest. The museum also provides a fitting focus on courage, with a special Victoria Cross display, including a touchscreen giving visitors access to detailed information about the actions and personal histories of each of the regiment's 59 Victoria Cross winners. For more details, call 01962 828 02-828-549. That's 01962-828-549.
Waste goes to China. Most of Hampshire's waste paper and cardboard is being sent halfway round the world to be recycled. Instead of being processed in the UK, 67% of the waste is being taken by sea more than 11,000 miles to China. Council bosses say recycling is being shipped further afield because of the closure of British paper mills. But opponents say that there are mills that would take on the work 100 miles away in Kent. They've said that shipping waste to China will undo the work done for the environment by recycling in the first place. All of Hampshire's councils are included as part of a contract with waste disposal firm Veolia, called the Project Integra Partnership. Veolia handles more than 700,000 tonnes of waste collected across Hampshire every year. County Environment boss Sean Woodward, interim chairman of Project Integra, said the recent closure of a number of UK paper mills has resulted in a significant reduction in available UK paper processing capacity. Alan Stone, leader of UKIP at the council, described the situation as a farce. He said, "This demonstrates that Hampshire County Council are more worried about potential fines from the EU Landfill Directive than they are about the true benefits of recycling." And there's a boring photograph of a load of cardboard.
Care provider creates 60 jobs. Business leaders have welcomed news that a care company is set to create 60 jobs in the county. Provider CareWatch Eastleigh has launched a vigorous recruitment drive and is casting its net across the county to recruit new workers. It is to fill 60 vacancies to keep up with the demand for carers to support people in Southampton, Eastleigh, Fareham and Gosport by enabling them to stay in their homes for as long as possible. The company says it's looking for compassionate and considerate workers and is set to hold open days for those who would like to apply. Stuart Dunn, of which there is a photograph, executive of Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, said the move is a positive one for Hampshire. He said, "We welcome the new jobs that are being created that will hopefully help those who are urgently in need of care. This could meet the growing demand of the ageing population and those needing care through disability." CareWatch was established in 1993 and today boasts more than 10,000 carers, providing a total of 200,000 hours a week of support for more than 150 offices across the UK. As well as giving assistance to elderly people, it helps adults and learning with learning and physical disabilities, people with dementia, those requiring end-of-life care, and patients recently discharged from hospital. Caroline Fipers, HR Recruitment at CareWatch Eastleigh, said, "Quality care and support workers are key to our organisation's services, but we need to recruit more if we are to meet the challenges of the UK's ageing population. We're looking for compassionate people to join our team of professionals, enabling our customers to retain their independence, dignity and security in their own home. This is a demanding but fulfilling career. If you believe you have the right qualities, we'd love to hear from you. Carers will provide personal care and practical support to customers, such as helping them with bathing and dressing, shopping for them or with them, and accompanying them to social events. Recruitment open days will be held in Chandler's Ford." Southampton Itchen MP Royston Smith says the move is a sign of a stronger economy in Southampton. He said the government has created the conditions where businesses feel confident enough to expand and take on new people. "Each job is a new pay packet for hard-working families. There is more to do, but our long-term plan is working." The open day will be held 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday, August the 31st at 15 East Links, Tollgate Business Park, Chandler's Ford.
And now more, unfortunately, from the local crime desk. A very sad headline. Pervert driving instructor is jailed after assaulting pupils. A driving instructor has been jailed for 2 years and 8 months after he sexually assaulted two of his pupils, with one of the offences taking place in Winchester. Stephen Mason, aged 59, of Blendworth Lane, Harefield, Southampton, pleaded guilty to 3 counts of sexual assault on a 17-year-old girl and a 19-year-old woman. Mason took his victims to car parks and remote locations during their lessons and then attacked them, Winchester Crown Court heard. One offence took place in Winchester and 2 in Southampton, and all between January and February this year. His victims reported this misconduct to the police. And investigating officer Detective Constable Heidi Boyd said, Mason abused the trust placed in him by these young women and their parents. He took advantage of their youth and placed them in a vulnerable situation. These young women have been incredibly brave throughout the process, and I would like to commend them for coming forward. She added, we've specially trained officers who work with victims of sexual offences to give them the support they need, and we would encourage anyone who's been the victim of a sex offence and has not already reported it to the police to come forward and speak to us in confidence and receive the support they may need. Mason was sentenced at Winchester Crown Court last Friday when he was jailed for 32 months. He first appeared in the same court on July the 9th where he admitted the offences. He was also placed on the sex offenders register for life. Meanwhile, a 58-year-old driving instructor with the same name called into Heart Radio yesterday to report he was getting abusive phone calls. The innocent Mr. Mason, based in Romsey, stressed that he was not the same person.
Celebration held as man turns 100. A Winchester man who has been at the heart of the community for decades has celebrated his centenary. Vernon Baker of St. Swithin Street was surrounded by friends and mutual members of the Winchester Quakers, marking his 100th birthday. Born in London, the senior Quaker read economics at University College London, subsequently working in the city. He was a conscientious objector during the Second World War and worked as a cowman on a farm in Froyle near Alton. After the war, he married his wife Joyce, who died in 2011. He was seconded to Swaziland for 2 years in the early 1970s. With their children, Anne, Roger and Jeremy, they moved to Winchester in 1975. He was made a co-warden of the former St. Lawrence's Vicarage in Colebrook Street. They were then called away to South Africa during the 1980s, where he worked as a co-warden at the Johannesburg Friends Meeting House. It was there that he was engaged in United Nations project Learning Afrikaans to help the reconciliation process following the apartheid era. Mr. Baker then returned to Winchester, becoming the visiting minister at Winchester Prison for 12 years. He and Joyce were both volunteers for the Marriage Guidance Council, which later became Relate. His children, 8 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren, all gathered for his celebration on the 1st of August. There he is in the photograph, upright, looking very fit and well, at the celebration at the Friends Meeting House. Well done, Vernon Baker.
New awards to highlight best local producers. Hampshire residents can vote for their favourite local producer in new awards. Hampshire Farmers Market, HFM, has launched its own annual awards for the public to vote for the best food producer, best drinks producer, best food to take away, and the best personality. New to this year will be the Best Food Initiative, decided by the HFM Board of Directors. Alex Hanford, HFM Business Manager, said, the awards will give our market visitors the chance to vote for their favourite products and producers. Voting forms will be at the market stalls, and the HFM Information Desk and residents can also vote online until September the 7th. Voting forms will be entered into a prize draw for a HFM hamper plus two tickets for the awards dinner, which will be held at the Brookfield Hotel, Emsworth, on September the 22nd.
We're very generous people in Winchester, aren't we? And this is news of another charity fundraising initiative. Headline, Charity Thanks Tesco for Funds Boost. Members of a Winchester Village charity have said thanks to staff at a local superstore. The Grattan Trust, which aims to maintain the village recreation ground at Sutton Scotney, has been given a much-needed cash boost by Tesco. They were handed £2,030 from the Tesco Community Awards to help them fund an outdoor gym trail at the ground. Fundraiser Margaret Sanford said, "We're extremely grateful to Tesco Community Trust Awards for their support." She added, "It's allowed us to install a greater range of gym equipment, which is benefiting all of the community, young and old alike. Everybody is improving their health and fitness and their well-being by working out in the fresh air in the beautiful setting of the Grattan. The Trust is working to develop new facilities, including a car park, riverside walk and activities for young people, all of which will be accessible for the disabled." Store manager at Tesco Winall, Darren Jenkins, said the store is committed to giving back to local communities. He said, "I am delighted that we are supporting the Grattan Trust. It's a fantastic organisation doing brilliant work in Sutton Scotney, and I'm delighted we were able to help them in this way."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.